It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, and we're still here. We had our meeting with the Phoenix police, and TSA called me, and she said, we're not coming. But we had plenty of police here, and we had discussion how we're going to do this the day before Thanksgiving. What we're going to do is we're full up today with speakers, so we're going to do an extra segment at the end real quick, and we'll put it up in the archive, and we'll have it YouTubed, and we'll get the video and all the goodies, and tell you what happened at our meeting today. We had the Students for Liberty here from ASU. They already have, I think, like 70 people saying they're going to go, and I think they were surprised by that. Doesn't even count. Lord knows how many people are going to go with their face painted blue and their kilts and their firearms and their T-shirts and their signs. And how are we going to deal with that? Has everybody got an ID? What are we going to do? Oh, well, we got it all discussed. So we'll talk about that later. But for today, we have some great guests for you. We got Butler Schaefer. Then we got Lawrence Reed from Foundation for Economic Education. And we got Stephen Molyneux from Toronto. And then Mark Hinkle, the national chairman of the Libertarian Party. And this TSA thing's been going stupid. But, you know, I think Butler Schaefer, he's coming to the Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. And you go there and you get all the goodies on the Freedom Summit. And those listeners pay no attention to the gazillion-dollar fee because you get in for $175. You just do the student package because we love you. And, you know, Butler, I got you there. Are you going to be flying in? Are you driving?
I think I'm going to hitchhike. You know, the way all this goofy stuff is going with the airports, it's almost like something you could dream up as a comic routine. I'm just too bad George Carlin isn't still around. I think he would have a field day with this stuff.
You know, it's already hitting. I was watching DVR the Daily Show with Jon Stewart and the Colbert Report with Stephen Colbert. And they are hammering on this TSA thing, and it's entertaining and it's sad. And this is going to get stupid. And I tell you, our meeting today, I think they just finally got an idea of what they're contending with, and they're not going to be running this show. And it's really Sky Harbor is their slogan is the friendliest airport in the world, and so on. We want to try and keep it that way.
I bet they're friendly. Yeah.
we'll see.
Friendlier than you want.
Well, you know, this whole thing that's going on, I mean, what's your perspective on this? I mean, you're a law professor, Southwestern University in Los Angeles, right?
Right.
And has this stuff come up in your classes yet? Have you been talking about it?
Oh, it comes up more in the hallways and so forth than it does in classes on constitutional law and so forth. But my thought on this is that, you know, this has nothing to do with terrorism per se. That's the rationale, the excuse that's given for all this stuff. But it's mainly to keep people in a state of constant humiliation. And the governments need that, particularly in times when the state is undergoing some major crisis. You know, they have to be able to, like the playground bully, have to be able to amass a tremendous amount of arbitrary force against people to keep them in line. And I think that's really what's going on. It's kind of like, you know, the Salem witch trials were not really designed to ferret out witches, but to solidify the political authority in Salem for reasons that had a lot to do with the history going on in England at the time. But the same thing with the Cold War, you know, the search for communists that were lying under your bed or in your wastebasket or hiding behind the refrigerator and so forth was designed more to keep people in kind of a herd-oriented kind of a mindset. And I think this is the same thing that's going on here. What I find amusing, and I've talked with my wife, Jane, about this a number of times, you know, when this whole thing really starts to fall apart, and it has been, I mean, everything from secession movements to nullification movements and everything else, when it really starts to fall apart, the thing that's going to trigger the final and the final collapse, if you want to call it that, is going to be something goofy. It's going to be something like this, and I wouldn't have anticipated it would be that. You'd think it'd be has something to do with the war or with high taxes or the depression or something like that. And instead, it's all about these federal bureaucrats that have this penchant for groping people.
Well, why? I mean, what is the reasoning behind them wanting to cause this kind of animosity towards, I mean, is it just to sell scanners? I mean, seriously, I mean, the more I find out, you know, Michael Chertoff was the Homeland Security guy, and now he's the main lobbyist, the head face of this scanner company. And I'm going, you know, is it that simple? They just want to make money at our expense?
No, there's something. I mean, there are a lot of people who do. There are a lot of the corporations that have figured out ways to profit nicely from all of the war on terror and so forth. But it's really more a need to keep people in a sense of humiliation, if you will, of domination. You saw it in Nazi Germany, you know, for example. I remember seeing a photograph, oh, there are lots of photographs, but one in particular of some German army officers just standing there with leering looks on their faces as a whole bunch of naked women prisoners ran by them. And I thought, well, these are the ancestors of TSA. You know, these are the people doing their own version of full-body scanning. And it doesn't change. You know, if you keep people humiliated, you lose their sense of individuality. This is something I think people really need to go back and reread Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl was a prisoner in two Nazi concentration camps. I think Auschwitz was one, and I've forgotten the other one. But he survived it, and he pointed out, you know, the way in which people, the people who survived it were people who had a very strong sense of reality, who had their own sense of centeredness, and who didn't let other people define reality for them. And I think this is something that, you know, all of us have always needed to do. This has been the big theme of my writing ever, you know, for 50 or some odd years.
Well, what is reality? I mean, our reality is what? You know, our reality is that we're going to have to prepare for what? I mean, that was one of the points that I brought up with the officers here, and I go, look, you need to have the people on your side. We need you on our side, because as the economy starts to go down the tubes and bad things start happening, it's going to be very difficult for you guys to do your job, and you're going to need our support. So we want to help make sure that the Phoenix Police Department is seen as defenders of our rights. And what we're looking for is the right to complain. I go, you know, where are we going to be able to complain? Are we going to be able, I mean, think about this. Yesterday, they just came up with the idea of wearing kilts. You know, and a G-string or nothing. And, okay, you want to, I opt out. You want to search me and run your hand slowly up my inner thigh? Well, you know, man, you get what you get. So, you know, that is of interest. And I'm going to, how are you guys going to deal with this? And what are we going to expect from you when people go with sidearms? Because it's legal here in the airport in Arizona. How are we going to deal with this? I mean, all these things came into play today. And we're going to talk about it more with somebody that you know. I mean, a constitutional law professor at Southwestern University in Los Angeles, Butler Schaefer. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. You know, another independence declaring kind of guy, Butler Schaefer, law professor, Southwestern University in Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, he's the mentor and was a law professor of my partner in the Freedom Summit, Mark J. Victor. That's how I know Butler for a long time. He's been a regular at the Freedom Summit. You always got to have Butler there. Because he's going to explain it to you. And this is, you know, that's one thing I always like talking to you about. Get kind of a progression as we get into the next cycle of students. And you have them coming in. Has their mindset changed? Are they less supportive of the state? Are they starting to get it? Or are the conversations getting more interesting? Tell me about that.
I find more and more of them are interested in going beyond the superficiality of what you see on newscasts and so forth. And I think that the reason for it, and Ron Paul had stated it very well, he said that the government hasn't done anything else, that the government schools haven't done anything else, have at least taught these kids arithmetic. And they can figure out that this just isn't working. It's no accident that when you talk about these kind of Ron Paul supporters, the Tea Party supporters and so forth, It's the young kids. It's not the old geezers with the old World War II baseball caps on and so forth, the McCain supporters and people like that. It's the young kids who realize what they're up against, and yeah, they're very very interested in that. And it's what you were talking about in terms of the TSA stuff and the police response. I think what is happening is that the system has learned to expect responses from us kind of radical types who go out and, you know, march and write stuff in newspapers and on blog sites and websites and so forth. They expect all that. But now they're losing just the regular, ordinary people, housewives and guys who have to travel for their work and so forth. When you start seeing pictures of nuns and three-year-old girls so being felt up by a bunch of TSA gropers, there comes a point where I think where people just say, that's enough. I remember a number of years ago when the state of Wisconsin, I think it was trying to get all of the Amish children rounded up and sent to government schools. And the Amish, of course, have their own system of education, which works very well for their culture. And there's this one photograph that was very poignant, showing a sheriff's deputy with a shotgun chasing a bunch of small Amish children through a cornfield to try and load them onto a bus. And that was powerful. That was a powerful image. And I think this is beginning to show up on the internet. You know, people going through this stuff, and they don't like it. I've heard many people say, I'd rather take my chances with any terrorists, if there are any out there. I'd rather take my chances with them than with this kind of nonsense.
Wow. I don't think people really understand how bad this is going to get. And I was kind of hoping that maybe I know you don't like making predictions and so on, but can you kind of walk us through what the next stages are? You know, what
I think
we can
it's going to expand. I think that the airport is just going to be the first step in this. Pretty soon you're going to be having these kinds of searches at shopping malls and any place else that people gather, because it has the effect of doing two things. One, you have large numbers of people around who are going to both be affected by this and also be subjected to it. And it goes back to the point that Frankel and others have made about how the dehumanization, the depersonalization of people is really essential to this kind of rule. And the capacity of the state to maintain its system of control is really diminishing. It's going down. Our world is becoming increasingly decentralized. And so in place of the vertical power structure that they've operated for many years, we're now getting horizontal networks of people in a variety of settings, you know, homeschooling and alternative education, alternative health care, information systems across the internet that are not based upon the top-down, we will tell you what you need to know kind of an approach. And the system is losing it, and you're seeing, as I said before, the secession movements and nullification movements abounding, and you know the state is going to, and the political establishment is going to have to respond to that, and they respond the way they always respond, which is through violence. And you have to remember, when you're talking about a basic definition of political systems, the state is defined, even political scientists will agree upon this, it's an entity with a monopoly on the use of violence or force, depending upon your choice of words, but it's a monopoly on the use of violence within a given territory. And when people begin to say, no, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, this should be off limits and so forth, that monopoly on violence tends to diminish, and they just can't have it.
You know, in our conversation with the Phoenix Police, it probably went on for at least an hour and a half, 2 hours. No, it started at 10, and it was afternoon, so yeah, it was over 2 hours. There was a point at which one of the officers and the supervisors said, after we discussed what we were going to do and questions that we had, they asked for a break. And they went out for probably at least 20 minutes outside, and I don't know what phone calls they were making and so on. They're like, they had to regroup on this one. It wasn't going the way they thought.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to just, I knew what they were trying to do. You know, we're the authority, and this is what, and we're going to do this, and if you, and that kind of thing. And the confrontation prevention squad that I had dealt with before, I'm going, now you know how this is going to go. I just want to make sure, you know, I have anything to do with it. I just knew this was going to happen. And Students for Liberty have already had 70 people that are going to be signed up. They're going. And mm-hmm. I'm going, you know, this could be hundreds. How are you going to ID everyone? Are you going to? And I guarantee there's going to be some kids that are just going to go, I'm not IDing myself. I mean, what? And then you're going to, what? What are you going to do? And so it kind of devolved there for a little bit. And then it kind of got to where I think they realized that their interests were best served by being professional and nice. And we'll see what we can work out, because they were trying to put it on somebody. And the mistake that the Campaign for Liberty girl, she started, well, we're going to do this, and the group is that, and they're, well, they love groups. Oh, you got to get a permit. And what they
got to do is get to the head of the group.
Well, what they did is yesterday, one of the activists here called asking about permits for this, and they mm-hmm. said, if you get a permit, we need to have everybody that's going, their name, address, and if you have one more person come or one fewer person come than you have, your permit is null and void.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going on. You know, and we're going to get more from Butler Schaefer at the Freedom Summit. .com. Go there and you'll say, hey, Butler, thanks for coming on, man. It's always great to talk to you. I really look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you. I can't think of a better time in the recent years to have a Freedom Summit than what's going on in the world right now.
Oh, you bet. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, one solution. What's that solution here? And declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. How about some freedom? Freedom. Let's do that freedom thing. You know, we got another freedom big woohoo guy coming to the Freedom Summit. FreedomSummit.com. Lawrence Reed from fee.org. F-E-E.org. We pull that bad boy up for you right there. I pushed the button. You can see it, all the goodies, FEE.org. Lawrence, I'm so glad that you're coming. We first met this last spring, and I think it was Michigan, and you did such a great job. And I'm really glad that you agreed to participate in this year's summit. And you can see from the list of speakers and so on, you're going to be having a good time with lots of your friends, aren't you?
Oh yeah. Thanks, Ernie. I am really looking forward to it very much.
Yeah, no, and you should, especially when it's first weekend in December in Phoenix.
That's right. That's right. I was just in Tucson about 2 weeks ago, and it was gorgeous. So I'm really looking forward to coming back to Arizona.
Well, tell the listeners what you're going to be speaking on. I mean, we kind of hold off on the subjects until right before because, you know, we've learned from past summits that the entire freaking planet changes, you know, days before the summit, so we don't get too locked down too early. But, you know, I'm sure your topic's probably going to, you know, be relevant. What are you going to be talking about?
Well, I'll be talking about something that happened 2,000 years ago, so it's not there isn't much change that's likely to happen between now and early December. I'll be talking about lessons from ancient Rome, and I'll be making it very relevant to today because in so many ways we are committing many of the very same mistakes that the ancient Romans committed and that led to their downfall. And my message is basically going to be if we don't get our fiscal house in order, if we don't put government in its proper place, our freedoms, if not our civilization itself, are headed to some very rocky times.
Well, define that. I mean, you know, rocky times. People.
I don't want to give too much away. Well, I think that in the long run, the way a people think about the proper role of government has an awful lot to do with where they're headed, where their freedoms are going, and whether or not they'll in fact survive as a civilization. And we know from experience that in places like ancient Rome, when a self-governing people confer upon their government the power to take from some and give to others and spend like there's no tomorrow, then it's only a matter of time before the last bone of the last taxpayer is picked bare.
Do you see that coming? I mean, is it's going to be a feeding frenzy? I kind of put it like this. The United States economy and the people here in America are like this big whale. And you got the sharks feasting on it, men are just going at it. They're having their fill. And then it gets down to where it's just a little bit of meat on the bone, and it starts getting frenzied. And sooner or later, the sharks start feeding on each other. And have we got to that point?
Well, the hour is late, there's no question. But if I thought that we couldn't turn things around, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, which is trying to educate people. I do think that a society can turn itself around, but it does require an awful lot of commitment to change. It requires some sacrifice in the short run, some tough choices, and I'm optimistic that we're in the process of turning things around, but time will tell.
You know, I let's talk about that, turning things around. Well, I'm going to be let's go ahead and get into details. To turn it around, there are different mechanisms by which you may do that. You know, you could do it peacefully. You know, the political process, you can just have a collapse of the economy. You can have an outside force say, guess what, we're your new rulers, liberators, whatever the heck they want to call it. You have successful state secessions. You have individual sovereignty secessions. You got, you know, Marvin the Martian with the button, has his own island, De La, whatever, and everybody moves there. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. How do you see this playing out? Is it going to be peaceful?
Well, I certainly hope so. I don't want to make a forecast because I don't know what the future holds. But my preference is for people through an educational process come to their senses and realize that we have strayed from our founding principles as a nation at our peril, and that we must reassert those principles. And that involves such things as expecting the right things of our politicians and not letting them get away with murdering the Constitution. It requires that we as a people look less to government for the answers to our problems and expect less from it. All of this this turnaround can happen peacefully through a change of mind, change of heart on the part of the American people. That's what I'm working towards, because anytime you talk about change through violence or any other means almost always leads to a situation that's even worse.
Yeah, you got revolution by the guys with the guns. Now, yay, we got more guys with guns in charge. You know, so I'm not a big giant fan of that. So we're, you know, doing the love-olution thing, which brings us to, you know, Dr. Paul now has his son in the Senate. You know, we'll see how that works out. But what about him running again in 2012? Are we on a speaking tour? We got, you know, that's one thing. Scott Horton from antiwar.com radio, I had him on and I asked him about it. And he said, oh, absolutely. I support Dr. Paul's 2012 speaking tour. Look what it did before. And we can look forward to another round of freed minds. And if you look at it that way, you know, of course, you know, do it, man. Go on the speaking tour. And I'm wondering what role you think he'll play in this discourse. I mean, is the economy going to so overwhelm what's happening that, you know, the other philosophical discussions are going to go by the wayside? Or are they going to be central to the economic understanding of what has to be done and how we got here and why?
Well, one of the reasons I'm hopeful for the country is I think these very important philosophical discussions are now emerging as critical issues, and that we will be talking more about them this year, next year, and into 2012 and beyond. I think the Tea Party has helped to assure that, and people like Ron Paul, Rand Paul, and some others around the country who got elected a couple of weeks ago, I think they're going to help elevate the national debate so that we're going to be talking more about fundamental principles. I think the American people are ready for that. I mean, they've been trying for years, all these politicians of both parties with their promises to give us this or take care of that, and they're fed up with the results. And there's a renewed interest, I think, in fundamental core principles. What is it that we want government to do, and what do we not want it to do? Where can we reduce it? And there's more attention for that than I've seen in my lifetime.
Can we, though?
Well, yeah, I think we can. You can't give up. Pessimism is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Got to be optimistic. We got into this mess because of bad ideas. We can get out of it with good ideas. It's all a matter of will sufficient numbers of people awaken enough in time enough to raise the alarm and put the right pressures on government to change its ways. We've all got to work for that and let the chips fall where they may. What more can you do?
Well, I tell you, you know, education, Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org is always a good place to go. And what I hear a lot, and I'm sure you do, you know, as a matter of fact, in your speech I heard before, I remember you talking about how influenced you were as a young man by Fee. And I paid attention to that. And as I talk to people about your coming and about the Freedom Summit and about Fee, I keep hearing the same thing. A lot of people my age, a little bit older, were so influenced over the years by Fee that is kind of the core of a lot of the activism and a lot of the foundation of their understanding of economics and politics and the Constitution. How, you know, so Fee has a big impact on a lot of people. When we come back, I'm going to go ahead give you an opportunity to give us some of the history of Fee so that we can hopefully use you as a resource, and a lot of people come visit with you and get your material at the Freedom Summit. FreedomSummit.com. Go check it out. Lawrence Reed.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, get over it here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my very, 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 very special guest, Lawrence Reed from Fee, Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org. And I'll tell you the one thing, you know, we can agree on, Lawrence, is that we're looking for an opportunity to have a change and it be peaceful. And I'm not giving up on the change. I'm just of the mind that in the end, freedom always wins. It's just that it gets really messy first. And I'm wondering if, you know, my advocacy for government, if we're going to do it through this government, certainly, that we're going to be able to have a successful love illusion, that we're going to be able to make the change using this process. And I'm getting the impression that, you know, from your advocacy and your rhetoric, that you're kind of, you know, let's use this system. Let's try and fix the Constitution. Let's get the government back in its box. And if that is your advocacy, I'm trying to get some mechanism by which you're going to do that.
Well, Ernie, I really believe very strongly that the system as it is, as imperfect as it is all that we've got for the moment. And I would not advocate any violence when you have an opportunity through a representative government system to make the needed changes. I'm just hoping that people will come to the senses, come to appreciate once again how a free economy and free society work, and then send the appropriate instructions to their government. And the way you do that is you elect the right people and you unelect the wrong people.
Okay. And this Congress that's come in, we got a big sea change in the little letter that's after their name. And I'm, what are you expecting from this Congress?
Well, I'm hopeful, but I also am prepared to be disappointed. I think usually when it comes to government, the lower your expectations, the more likely you'll be happier in the end. Well, that's a long way of saying that I'm very hopeful, but time will tell. If people who showed up at the polls and voted for so many of the right people this time go back home and forget it, then the progress that we're expecting will all come undone. It requires us to be active and to demand that our government get its house in order, and not at the expense of people through higher taxes, but rather through drastically cutting its spending. So I'm hopeful. Time will tell, but it's not going to be easy.
You know, one thing that would be of interest to a lot of people, I'm sure, and certainly myself, is what are you looking for as a sign? I mean, you know, we have the Congress will start in January. They'll get in there. They'll have their, I don't know, whatever woo-hoo legislation that they're putting in. I'm sure both Dr. Paul's will have legislation that people are going to be paying attention to. And how long before you start to see if there is going to be political success using this Congress? I mean, at what point are you do they have to wait until Obama actually signs something or at least put it on his desk? And how many weeks, months are you willing, to go a full term, a year? Or is it going to become part of the 2012 election cycle? Or are we going to start? Because even here in Arizona, there are polls that they have in local newspapers and so on for who's your choice for Republican candidate for president. And once again, they don't even put Ron Paul's name on the poll. Now, of course, all the comments and people freaking out, and we're just going through the same thing again. So I'm wondering, you know, what you're going to be looking for as your measure that they're going in the right direction.
Well, spending. Spending is the single most important issue. I won't be convinced that we've made a substantial turnaround until we see actual and substantial spending reductions passed into law. That's not going to be easy as long as Barack Obama's in the White House, because that's not his perspective. But the House of Representatives could start by at least sending a strong message by repealing Obamacare and slashing government spending. After all, under our Constitution, the House is the appropriating body, and the president can't spend it if the House doesn't appropriate it. So I'll be looking for what they do on spending, and not just nipping and tucking here and there, but dramatic spending reductions, the wholesale elimination of activities and programs and bureaucracies of government, not just cutting spending, but actually eliminating some agencies and departments of government. That would be a great sign. Now, you may not get much of that in this next Congress, but maybe in 2012, when we can go at it again, we can elect enough additional good ones that they'll do that. That's my hope, but time will tell. Meantime, you know, we focused in this interview so much on politics. I think certainly my work is focused not on politics. It's focused on educating the grassroots across the country. Education is where the long-run battle will be won or lost. If Americans don't, once again, come to understand and appreciate and be prepared to sacrifice everything for individual liberty, then this country's future is very, very dark indeed, no matter who gets elected.
You know, the one thing that I remember, it was the Ross Perot years. It's 1992. He's screaming about, you know, here's the chart. Here's what's going to happen to the economy. This is our debt, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden, Frank Luntz, which is one of his pollsters now working for Fox, he went on to work for Newt Gingrich and crowd with the Contract with America, or On America, depending on your perspective. They did that 6 weeks before the midterm election in 94. Now we have 6 weeks before the midterm election after the Ron Paul Revolution, and they did this promise with America. And this was the, you know, the Tea Party creed. This is our promise. This is the group. This is what we're going to do. And in there, I mean, I remember saying things. It's like more war. I mean, I certainly saw that. And, you know, defense and missile shield and enforcement of sanctions in Iran, not on Iran or about Iran or, you know, having, you know, it's like, you know, U.S., unilateral enforcement of sanctions in Iran. And I'm going, seriously? This was the promise. This is what they were elected on. So it's not going to take very long before we start to see what's being passed by them. And I bet you it's more military spending.
Well, that's been, unfortunately, the course of recent history. There's no question about it. But Dr. Paul has been, as you know, on the forefront of trying to get that debate changed so that people start asking questions like, why do we have to have hundreds of thousands of troops in places like Western Europe more than two decades after the fall of the Soviet Union? Why is America in so many other places around the world? If our foreign policy was dictated exclusively by the legitimate security and defense interests of our people, I don't think we need to be in some 100 or 120 countries. I think we'd be spending a lot less and focusing on defending ourselves, not most of the rest of the world.
Well, that wasn't the promise. I mean, they already told us what they're going to do.
Oh, yeah, well, you may be right. I'm not acquainted with that part of it, but I'm not a partisan Republican, so they say a lot of things I don't necessarily read or pay attention to.
So we're looking for economic, you know, spending cuts. I mean, if they're going to be adding on more bailouts and more, so I mean, right now we're looking at the lame duck Congress wanting to pass retroactive laws that make all this kind of robo-signing of changing property rights in these mortgages and so on. State by state, got 50 attorney generals in there going, they're going to make it to where they can just, we can foreclose because we just changed the law. And
well, I have no confidence in the current Congress, the one that's about to leave, whether they have a lame duck session that does much or not. I mean, this is the bunch that gave us Obamacare, that gave us the bailouts, and so I wouldn't put anything past this group. I'm a little more hopeful for the next one, though.
Yay, the next one! They're gonna undo that law.
Well, it remains to be seen. I'm not predicting that they will. I think even if they did, it would likely be only by the House, not by the Senate. And even if the Senate repealed Obamacare, Obama himself would veto it. But so this is probably a many-year project just to get Obamacare off the books.
Well, you know, that's what we're going to hear about and give us some perspective on history and the fall of the Roman Empire and how we're repeating a lot of the same things. Give us an education from Lawrence Reed from the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org. Go check it out. Here on Declare Your Independence, we are going to give you the great speakers at the Freedom Summit, of which Lawrence Reed is one of them. We'll be right back.